My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. Yeah.
An NBA guest to be rolled out here. The 76ers had a chance to close out the Raptors yesterday and sweep them away in the first round of the playoffs. Didn't happen. Toronto defended their home court and sent the series back to Philly, trailing 3-1, but there will be a game 5. We'll talk about how we've gotten to where we've gotten, and is there any chance the Raptors make this even more competitive coming back to Philadelphia? He covers the Sixers on a day-in, day-out basis for his newsletter, The Daily Six. Mr. Derek Bodner joins me here on CBS Sports Radio. How you be, DB?
Doing well, Jody.
Good to hear. Sixers, I thought, were primed to sweep out the Toronto Raptors yesterday. I thought Toronto had thrown all the punches they had and hadn't been able to come away with a win. And the previous game, disheartening in that you had the lead throughout, and Embiid makes the big shot that he makes late to grasp victory from the jaws of defeat. What did Toronto do yesterday that allowed them to get the better of the Sixers?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it came down to the Sixers. You know, I think their energy level was just not all that high. You know, they got beat on the glass for the second game in a row. They gave up a lot of bad turnovers. They didn't get back well in transition. They didn't really attack the basket. All that led to Toronto shooting a lot more free throws. I think a lot of it did come down to the Sixers, and I think they had a little bit of a letdown game coming up with a 3-0 lead. You know, I think Toronto played with more desperation, and I think Joel Embiid just didn't look like himself, and obviously that plays into more of the thumb injury, but I think a lot of it does come down to the Sixers. And I give Toronto credit because they came out and they certainly had the energy and the effort level that they needed in a closeout game, you know, but I don't think there was anything that Toronto did in terms of scheme or where they were sending double teams from or timing of it that really was different than what they were doing earlier in the season. I think the Sixers had a pretty massive letdown game, and I expected a little bit of that from Joel Embiid, and I think some of the turnovers you could probably, you know, relate to the thumb injury a little bit, but they got a, you know, a passive version of Tyrese Maxey. They got James Harden, who was playing a little too much isolation game. They just did not get, outside of probably Tobias Harris, they didn't have a real good performance from any of their key players. And when that happens, and you lose a turnover battle, and you lose a rebounding battle, you're going to drop a game, even if you are the more talented team, and I think that's what happened.
Let's start with Embiid, the thumb injury. Yeah, he just didn't seem like himself yesterday. Let down or the injury affecting him. We expect them to be more motivated in front of their home crowd coming home for game number 5. But is Embiid's injury something that will be getting better? Are they risking by playing him? Is this something that time off would heal? Where is his thumb at and how's it going to play going forward?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that's going to get better until he's able to have surgery, but I also don't think it's going to get significantly worse while playing through it. I think it's mostly going to come down to 2 things. You know, that's a combination of pain tolerance, but also how it impacts his grip on the basketball. You know, I think we saw both of those factor in the other night there. You know, I think part of the rebounding edge that Toronto had, Embiid just wasn't as dominant on the glass as he normally was. I don't think he had an offensive rebound the entire game. Only ended up with 8 rebounds on the night, the first time he's been in single digits in, I think, over a month. I think part of that was I think he knows going inside, his hand's going to get hit, and there's a little bit of a hesitancy that maybe isn't always there. And then there's also gripping the basketball. I think the injury affects that a little bit as well. You saw that. I think he only attempted 1-3. I think you saw that with some of the passes. And that's not really necessarily maybe even a pain threshold thing. It's just this doesn't feel like it normally does. I can't get the grip that I normally do. I think that's something he's going to have to learn how to play through until he's able to have the surgery that I think he's going to end up needing to correct it. So I think it's something where he's going to play through it. I don't think it's probably going to get significantly worse. But I also don't expect him to get better here until he is able to eventually get the surgery he needs.
One thing you mentioned, desperation. Toronto played with it, and there was one particular player who stuck out for me, and that was Pascal Siakam. And coming into the series, when I predicted the 76ers in seven, because I thought it was going to be a very good and tough and competitive series, it was because I didn't really know who the Sixers were going to match up with Pascal Siakam. Truth be told, I don't think they have an individual player that does match up well with him. Embiid takes him from time to time. Harris gives up too many inches for me. Yes, I think Thibault might be their best guy to take a shot on him. He gives up plenty inches, but that wasn't even an option with the games in Toronto. What can they do to keep Pascal Siakam from having another game like the one he had in game four?
Yeah, and you're right. He played a lot more aggressive than he has earlier in the season, and I think that's a huge key for Toronto. You know, they generate a lot of open threes based off of him getting in the paint, getting in the middle lane, and kicking it out there to their shooters. They don't really have that many sets they can go to, especially with Fred VanVleet, so obviously limited by both the knee and the hip. They need him to be playing at that level to have even a chance. And I think a big key was not only was getting in the middle and getting those driving kick opportunities, but he got to the free throw line, I think, 15 times. That was key. I think part of that, you know, Tobias Harris, through the first three games, did an incredible job on Pascal. He's really been their primary defender on him. Joel Embiid has been their secondary defender. But Tobias Harris has taken upon himself and did a real good job there in the first three games. I don't think his energy level was perfect there on the defensive side of the court as well. And he does give up some size to him and some physicality to him, to Pascal. But he was not as effective. He was not as engaged and locked in as he was earlier in the season. They need the best version of Tobias defensively that they can get, because he's really the only one. You start going through the Sixers other defenders, you know, Matisse Thybulle, if you're concerned about Tobias Harris not having the size or physicality for Siakam, Matisse Thybulle certainly doesn't, and he obviously wasn't up there with them in Toronto, and neither does Danny Green. So they need you know, Tobias Harris to play a little better than they did. But they also need to be crisper in their rotations. And I just felt like all night they were slow on their closeouts, slow on their rotations, slow on the defensive glass. They just need to execute better and sharper. I really don't think there's a whole lot schematically they have to fix. They just can't play as lackadaisical as they did, for lack of a better word.
Let me ask you about Danny Green, because I give Doc Rivers credit. When they knew that Thibault was going to be out of the Toronto games because he wasn't completely vaccinated, he inserted Green into the starting lineup and brought Thibault off the bench, and it seemed to lift Danny Green, that he played really well in the two games in Philadelphia, almost like turning back the clock a couple of years. Not quite as much the last couple of games. How does Doc split it up between Green and Thibault in game five back in Philly?
You know, I still think Danny Green's going to start. I don't think Doc wants to get into a spot where he's, you know, changing location and changing starters. But I think the key is that, you know, Danny Green, rather than playing 25, 30 minutes, is going to play 20 or 25, depending on how he's you know, looking throughout the course of the game. George Niang, rather than playing 25 or whatever he played up in Toronto, can play 15. I think that's really where Matisse Thybulle, and look, they could use Matisse Thybulle if Fred VanVleet is able to play. They could certainly use him on him defensively. They could use him on Gary Trent Jr., who has really been maybe the one consistent shooter that Toronto has had over the course of the series. They could use Thybulle on both of them. But really what they need is someone to limit the minutes of Danny Green and George Niang, and I think that's going to be real key for them, because I do think both of those veterans who are, in Danny Green's case, you know, a little older in the tooth, in George Niang's case, just there's a diminishing returns and more minutes he plays, they could use fewer minutes. So I think getting Thybulle will be back big for game five.
Derek Bodner from the Daily Six newsletter, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio, talking Raptors and Sixers game five back in Philly tomorrow night. You did mention a less aggressive Tyrese Maxey, at least in yesterday's game for sure. But even, I would say, both games in Toronto, he opens up the series with his 38-point performance, second highest in the playoffs so far this year by any player in 38 minutes. And then 23 game two, 19 game three, only 11 points yesterday. It has been diminishing returns on him, on his teammates, on his coach, or did he just set the bar ridiculously high with that game one performance?
Yeah, I mean, he set the bar high, but we've seen him reach that bar a number of times over the course of the regular season. It's a little bit strange. I did think that the Sixers went to James Harden a little bit more than they should have, especially after the first quarter. He seemed like he started to lose his legs a little bit. I think they probably could have dialed up more plays for Maxey. And I think they got out of their base offensive set pretty early there against the Raptors. And I think when that happens, Maxey can go a couple of possessions, a couple of minutes without really touching the ball, especially when you're trying to feed you all in the post, when you're trying to run some of your offense through Harden. I think they need to design more plays to get him going, because I think when he is going, and when you can get sort of like that two-man game with Harden and Maxey, and you can run some pick and rolls and get the matchups that you want, he is one of their more consistent half-court scorers, especially when you start talking about creating off the dribble in isolation. And I think they just ignored him far too much. And maybe he's not yet at the point in his career, especially when you're talking about playing with an MVP caliber player with Joel Embiid and a former MVP in James Harden. He's got to be a little more assertive in demanding the ball. And I think that's going to come with more experience and maturity. But right now they need him. He might be, especially if Joel Embiid's not going to be what Joel Embiid has been because of the thumb, and James Harden right now doesn't look like the player that he was a couple of years ago, they need his half-court scoring, they need his ability to create off the dribble, and they need him to be more assertive and aggressive in demanding it.
I think he's absolutely got to be a 25-point game guy in this next game coming up, because you're right, Embiid is questionable. Harden has done a nice job of running the show, but he just doesn't seem to be the scorer that he used to be. So somebody's got to step up big for them on offense. We'll see if Maxey is that guy. All right, want to question about Nick Nurse, the Toronto coach. Came into the series, I think this was his predisposition, because you got the pre-series quotes and the like. He did go to the, it's so difficult to defend Joel Embiid because the referees give him every call pretty much before the series started, and he's played that harp every single game since. It was a little bit more effective here in game number four, because I don't think they dropped their physicality. I think they played him the way they wanted to play him and just didn't get as many whistles going their way. Did you like his philosophy before the series started? Do you think he finally got home trying to tell the referees, you can't call a foul every time Embiid touches the ball?
Yeah, I mean, I think referees are humans, and I think they will hear that and not consciously react to it. I don't think there's a grand conspiracy, but I think it can have some effect. And it's, the smart thing for Nick Nurse to do, not only for the referees and maybe influencing their future calls, but also just for his own team and them feeling like he's got their back. I don't think it's going to have a massive, I think maybe the bigger thing, even than the calls that were not called on Joel Embiid, because Embiid still got the line like 8 or 9 times, James Harden 11. They still got the line a decent amount. I think the big change in game four was that Siakam got there 15 times and Toronto got there as much as they did. Yeah, look, I think both coaches should be talking about the fouls, just because it doesn't, outside of an occasional fine, it doesn't really hurt them to do so. It does, I think, can have a marginal impact. But I think as the series plays out, I expect the more physical team to get more calls. And quite frankly, I think the Raptors, maybe not the more physical team, but certainly the more aggressive team. And I think when you do that, you tend to get rewarded by the refs. If I were Doc Rivers, no matter what I would be saying externally about the refs, internally I would be talking far more about they just didn't show up with the right kind of energy and aggressiveness. And I think that showed up on the foul sheet as well.
How does that play itself out here in game number five? Because, and I'm sure the Sixers knew this prior to game four, but they let that opportunity slip away. The shorter this series goes, the more time Embiid's thumb gets to rest. Will Doc be hammering that home? Will they play with the level of intensity needed to shut this thing out in game number five?
I think they will. And I think It's just a situation where Toronto has been a tough place for Joel Embiid to win throughout the course of his career, both in the playoffs and the regular season. They obviously did pick up that important Game 3 win, but I don't think you want to go back up to Toronto for Game 6, knowing that if you drop that game, you would be staring history right in its face. Obviously, NBA teams have never lost, went up 3-0 in the series. They're 143-0. So I don't think you want to go up there to Toronto, knowing that, like I said, if you drop that game, you could be staring history in its face. So I think they're going to come out there with the right sense of urgency and intensity. I do think Game 4, a lot of times you see that where the team up 3-0 just doesn't have the same sense of urgency that got them to that point. Drop a game, you have a gentleman's sweep. I think they will come out with the right focus to prevent this from going to 6 in Toronto. But, you know, Embiid's injury sort of cast a shadow over a lot of it, cast some doubt over what you would expect their game plan and their effectiveness to be. So I think that's a wild card. But I think effort-wise, it will be a much better showing than Game 4, for sure.
All right. I know you don't write this way, but I'm going to ask you to talk this way for me. Put your Sixer colors glasses on and drop the objectivity for a second. Assuming the Sixers win this next game and take it in 5, what have you seen from the rest of the Eastern Conference? We know Miami goes for a 3-1 lead tonight. Boston is already up 3-0 and is only one game away from taking out the Nets. The Bucks got a good win today. The next round matchup would be Miami, and then you'd have to take on either a Buck or Nets squad if they get through their series. Has anyone else in the Eastern Conference played to the level of, well, okay, yeah, the Sixers could win this round, but that's about it, because those who are left in their way are just too good for them? Or has this been a balanced, competitive Eastern Conference playoff so far that you see the Sixers playing with anybody?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think Miami, Milwaukee, and Boston are all very tough matchups for the Sixers for different reasons. Milwaukee, I think, has been the most up and down. You know, at their high points, they can look very good, and at their mediocre points, they can look pretty mediocre, more so than you expect a team of that stature that has won that many games and won a championship to do so. They seem very up and down lately, not only in the playoffs, but throughout the second half of the season as well. Boston has been the most consistent team, and that defense is, if you're a Sixers fan, I think pretty terrifying. I think that defense matches up really well with what the Sixers would be trying to do, and I think that would be a tough matchup for the Sixers. And Miami's, I think, a little tough to judge just because Atlanta has maybe the worst defensive backcourt I've ever seen, so I expect Jimmy Butler et al. To have pretty good success against them. I'm not sure we can really rate them too much based on what they do here, but certainly they have a defense, especially with a player like Bam, who can not only defend Embiid but also switch on the Harden if they need to. I think that would be a tough matchup. Well, honestly, I think all three of those matchups would be tough for the Sixers, especially with Joel Embiid's injury. I'm not sure I'd make them the favorites over any of them. But I think Boston certainly has been the most consistent and the most consistently impressive team of those three here in the first round.
And the reason why the Celtics might be the best team overall, but the reason why they're the worst matchup for the Sixers is they can throw so many different looks at Embiid. They can put Horford on him, who's done a really good job when he's not been his teammate of making Embiid's life more difficult. You throw Theis on him for a couple of minutes just to play physical defense and bump and grind with him. And then you go Robert Williams, who's a little undersized, but is one of the best defensive bigs in the NBA. Yeah, that's it's not only good matchup, it's derivation matchups. So they've got different guys that they could throw at Embiid. I think the Celtics is the team the Sixers should want to avoid the most.
No, I agree. And then they have all kinds of, you know, 6'7", 6'8", wings who are real good at digging down in the post, real good at switching, real good at recovering. They're one of the most fundamentally sound defenses that really have no points that you can attack consistently. And especially when you start talking about not only defending Joel Embiid, but how James Harden is going to have success against that team. I think they would have a lot of success defending the Sixers. And, I think they would be the team I'd want to avoid the most if I was a Sixers fan.
And I know you've heard this by now, maybe not everybody else has. The Nets are not going to have Ben Simmons for Game 4. He was ruled out today. Man, I thought that was the turning point. If they got Ben at the... What if he does come back at any point in this series, and it won't be in Game 4 if the Nets find a way to fend off the Celtics and get it to a Game 5, what can Simmons bring to the table when he hasn't played an NBA game in a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point, you know that you just don't have the defensive firepower to compete in the playoffs, and it's probably too late to really realize that and change that the trajectory of the team right now. I think either. Obviously, I don't expect them to come back down, you know, down 0-3 to win, regardless of what they do. So I almost wonder if it's just a reward for the hard work, but then he doesn't seem like he's super enthused about playing right now anyway. I don't understand the rationale behind it, if I'm being honest. Like, if they were closer to being competitive, if it was 2-1 or, you know, maybe after this game it was 2-2, then maybe I could see myself talking myself into it. But you're not going to make a run in the playoffs, so there's really no, I don't know. I don't entirely know what's going on up there. I am sort of just happy it's not my my beat to cover anymore, if I'm being honest.
Sixer fans, follow him at Derek Bodner NBA. And that's where you get the information to subscribe for his Daily Six newsletter. DB, always learn something when I have you on talking Sixer basketball. Thanks for adding the info again tonight.
Yep, thank you. My pleasure.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.